From KUAZ, Arizona Public Media, I'm Mark McLemore, and this is Arizona Spotlight. Coming up on today's show, Christopher Conover will bring us analysis and some reactions to Governor Janet Napolitano's 2008 State of the State Address. Kimberly Kraft takes us on a visit to the San Miguel School in Tucson, which combines academics with practical experience to prepare kids for college and careers. We'll go inside the University of Arizona's Meat Science Laboratory with Robert Rappaport to find out what they're doing to improve and promote locally produced meat products. Plus, Luis Carrion goes on a trip to another unusual Tucson school, one where the students learn all about the finer points of fencing. That's coming up next on Arizona Spotlight. Governor Janet Napolitano opened the 2008 legislative session last Monday with the delivery of her State of the State Address. The annual speech is both a report covering the last year and an outline of what the governor wants state lawmakers to accomplish during their time at the Capitol. Christopher Conover brings us this report.
My message to you today is clear. The state of Arizona is strong.
That's how Governor Janet Napolitano began her sixth State of the State address, a sentiment bringing mixed reviews from some in the legislature, including Senate President Tim Bee.
Well, I think the governor was trying to stay very upbeat and optimistic in light of the giant shortfall we have in our budget, which is approaching $1 billion. It really is, you could round it up to $1 billion. And then talking about $1.8 billion for next year, there wasn't a lot of really optimistic things we could go into. But the governor talked about the state being strong, and I think she meant that we have strong people that live here, and that's certainly the way I interpreted it. And we have, she had some bold initiatives that we have, as lawmakers, have to see the deals on. Some of those sounded very expensive.
Two of the proposals raising financial flags for the legislature deal with tuition. The first looks 5 years into the future.
Now, as you know, with the budget, we can't do as much immediately as we would like, but we can think of the future and think forward. And so I propose this. This year's eighth graders in Arizona will graduate from high school in the year 2012. That is Arizona's centennial year. That is when we turn 100 years old. So I propose for the class of eighth graders and every class after them, if they make a contract with us and they get a B average and they stay out of trouble, they will be provided free tuition at any community college or university in Arizona, period.
The second deals with next year's crop of college freshmen.
I believe that beginning next year, any student who begins college at any of our universities should have their tuition guaranteed for 4 years. So it will not rise for 4 years. We can do that. We should. It helps people with their planning, helps families with their planning. Also, by the way, gives students an incentive to finish in 4 years.
University of Arizona President Dr. Robert Shelton has spent a number of days at the state capitol during the last week dealing with the current state budget crisis. And the tuition rate proposal by the governor is giving him pause.
She had some specific proposals that I think we can all embrace, provided the conditions are right. We all want to provide more access to higher education. That goes to her, what does she call it, her millennium class, okay, and beyond. We all want to ensure that there's more predictability in what the cost of higher education will be. That goes to the guaranteed tuition for a four-year period. And I think all of those are terrific ideas. The key to implementing them is to make sure we have stability in our other sources of funding, which of course means primarily from the state.
Any concern with that guaranteed tuition that if the university needed to raise tuition now, in theory, you could only raise tuition on a quarter of the class,
well, that,
of the undergraduate?
Exactly. That is something that one has to be very careful about. Again, the predictability factor we all agree on. The question is, how do we get that most effectively and not injure the university's ability to deliver classes, to deliver counselors, advisors, so that when the students come, they're not only getting a cost-effective education, but they're getting a world-class education.
After delivering the Southern Arizona version of the State of the State speech at a luncheon at the Tucson Convention Center on Wednesday, the governor was reluctant to pull that idea back.
Well, actually, NAU and ASU had already agreed to do this, so only the U of A was not doing it. And to me, the advantage for certainty, for planning, and to allow people to know when they go in, this is what their tuition is going to be for the next 4 years, outweighs that concern. Like I said, two of the three universities were already doing it. We ought to make it uniform throughout the state.
Two Phoenix Democrats have already filed a bill in the state house to do exactly what the governor wants when it comes to guaranteeing tuition for the freshman class at the state universities. Of course, that's only the first step in the process, so the idea is a long way from becoming a reality, especially because the proposal involves money. And as Senate President Tim Bee points out, budget tightening is job one right now.
We'll be sitting down and looking at all of the options we have available to us. There will need to be cuts to state government, and there will also need to be, we're looking at options like our budget stabilization count from the rainy day fund of the amounts of money that we need to help us get through this problem.
While no one is denying the budget shortfall will make things more difficult, the governor finished her speech encouraging lawmakers to not be paralyzed by the nearly billion-dollar hole in the budget.
Arizonans years from now won't ask how we balance the budget. Instead, they'll ask how we improved education, ensured their safety, built a prosperous economy, and planned for explosive growth.
The legislature is expected to take a break from their day-to-day work next week and concentrate exclusively on the current budget shortfall before getting back to business as usual. For Arizona Spotlight, I'm Christopher Conover.
Often, employers can be heard complaining that too many students graduate from high school unprepared for the world of work. Here in Tucson, San Miguel High School wants to make sure that's not the case with their graduates. The fledgling school will be graduating its first class of seniors this spring. Kimberly Kraft visited the San Miguel High School to find out more about their practical experience curriculum.
Jose Herrera skips class on Thursdays. Instead, he spends the day at work at Advanced Ceramics Manufacturing.
Well, it prepares me for the future. It gets me ready. Basically, it just gives me more experience in the work field. And, it just helps for life.
At San Miguel High School, every student spends one day a week working on the job. They make up for the time with extended class days. The LaSallian Catholic School is one of 19 nationwide employing the work and classroom combination. President Elizabeth Gettle says the school has committed to serve only students of limited financial means and expects to send 100% of them off to college.
Our students come from neighborhoods where all of that is present. Violence, gang activity, drug use, substance abuse of all sorts, and they walk away from that, many of them, into this setting where we're asking them to wear a shirt and tie and do their homework and pay attention and behave. And I see them doing that every day.
Enrollment at the high school is 83% Latino and 11% Native American. So far, the school has a retention rate of 83%, and officials expect that number to improve when the school reaches full enrollment. Families pay tuition on a sliding scale, and students like Damian Baeza contribute to the cost of their education by working in the corporate internship program.
Well, being exposed to that, I think it's going to help me in the future. For any job I take, I mean, I've been working with adults, people. I've learned how to communicate. I've learned how to take responsibility for a number of things.
When she's not in class, Jure Harmon also works at Advanced Ceramics Research. She's found a perfect balance between the workplace and the classroom.
I saw, okay, all the math that I've been learning in school, all the chemistry, all the biology. This is where it comes into play. This is where it all happens, right here. And so ever since then, I just loved it. And I've worked there for 3 years, and every year it gets better and better.
Harmon says before she arrived at San Miguel, she struggled with math and science. The small class sizes and caring teachers gave her the confidence to plan on pursuing a career as an engineer.
Once I came to San Miguel and I engaged with a lot of the professors and stuff like that, they really showed me a different world that I never thought was there. They showed me that, you know, math can be interesting. It's not just adding and subtracting numbers, but you can apply it to your everyday life.
San Miguel High School has created a structure for students to succeed. Students learn that it's cool to be a good student, do homework, and wear a tie to class. Gettle says every student, regardless of class or race, deserves a quality education, and she says our future depends on it.
If we don't educate our students and educate them well, our economic future in America is dismal. There are no jobs for uneducated people. 20 years down the road, we can envision an economic crash. There are no jobs for uneducated workers. So we see this very practically as economic development and workforce development, not just as educational opportunities for our students.
Steve Turcotte, president of Advanced Ceramics Manufacturing, knows that all too well. He views his role as corporate partner as critical in exposing students to cutting-edge science.
We deal in some very new, rigid, exploratory science. And to be able to bring the depth and breadth of the, you know, frontier of science and technology to some young kids, it really speaks, I think, of the future of our country. If we don't get young men and women interested in science and technology, then we're going to stagnate.
Turcotte says every San Miguel student who has worked at Advanced Ceramics Manufacturing comes eager to learn. The experience has clearly inspired Herrera, who has begun to research his options for after graduation.
Yeah, I want to go to USC, hopefully, get a scholarship to go there, and start studying some composite engineering.
To a person, students like Jere Harmon and Edward Sanchez expect to excel in their studies and their careers, but also to return to the community that has given them so much.
To show them that even though you come from a low-class family or you may not have all the opportunities other kids may have, you can still take what you have and run with it and be the best that you can be in whatever you desire to be.
I would like to have a successful job and then be able to, like, come back here and show what I have done to help motivate the students of tomorrow to push themselves harder and become successful themselves.
With dropout rates for Latino students hovering at about 50%, these students expect to beat the odds. The first class of seniors will graduate from San Miguel High School this spring. For Arizona Spotlight, I'm Kimberly Kraft.
Coming up in the second half of the show, do you eat meat? If so, then stay tuned to hear about research being done at the U of A's Meat Science Laboratory. And on guard as we visit the Arizona Fencing Academy. That's all next here on Arizona Spotlight. As you prepare your dinner tonight, if it includes meat, take a moment to consider the journey that the meat has been on before arriving at your table. There are many stages and safety checks for U.S. meat products to pass through, as the work being done at the U of A's Meat Science Facility reveals. Next, Robert Rappaport takes us on a visit to the only lab of its kind at a university in the Southwest.
Deep within the University of Arizona's Agricultural Center near Campbell and Roger is the Meat Science Laboratory, where students learn the ins and outs of the meat industry. U of A meat scientist Dr. John Marcello runs the self-supporting USDA-inspected lab and says the facility provides a hands-on experience for students.
Well, we harvest meat animals such as cattle, sheep, swine, and goats, and also we are approved under federal inspection to do buffalo, elk, and deer, and ratites, which would take in emus and ostriches and rheas. And, of course, most of our work is done as a service-type work because we cater to a lot of rancher groups with regard to natural beef programs and organic beef programs. And we have 17 different labels for natural beef for different rancher groups in Arizona as well as in New Mexico. And then we process carcasses with regard to retail cuts or into such things as hot dogs or summer sausage or things of that nature. So processed meats of that type, hams and bacons.
Marcello says one of the main purposes of the lab is to teach food safety. He says not only is it the meat or vegetable processor's job to follow safety guidelines throughout the process, but the customer has some responsibility too.
One of the biggest problems we have in the industry right now is temperature abuse of the product. And I use the term life begins at 40. If we would refrigerate that product at below 40 degrees, we'd eliminate a large percentage of foodborne illnesses. So we try to teach the consumer that our product can go out of here as best prepared as possible. And if somebody temperature abuses it and it has one pathogen in it, within 8 hours you can have over a billion organisms with the right temperature and what moisture conditions. So it's now if somebody gets sick on it, it's not the consumer's fault, it's our fault because our inspection stamp is on that particular product. So it's a tough life with regard to that.
Marcello says after being harvested and cleaned, the meat hangs in a cold storage area until it can be processed.
We're in what we call the chill cooler. This is a cooler that's maintained at about 32 degrees where the warm carcasses come in to be chilled. They stay in here approximately 24 hours to 48 hours. It's important that the carcass be chilled from right around 98 degrees, which the animal will have that temperature down to below 40 for, again, food safety reasons, because the colder the temperature, the less trouble we have with microbes on them.
From there, we move on to the next room where the cutting is performed.
We are in the fabrication room where we process the carcass into primal cuts and retail cuts. For consumer use or for storage. A lot of the carcasses that we cut, especially beef carcasses, we will vacuum package and age in the bag, which is called wet aging. These are all fair animals that will actually go back to individuals in the various counties from which they originated.
U of A sophomore Caitlin Williams comes from a family that owns a ranch and meatpacking plant in northern Arizona. The agricultural education major and animal science minor says she wants to expand her knowledge and teach others.
I'd like to work somewhere in the beef industry, working for the Beef Checkoff Program or the Beef Council. First, I'll probably go out and teach agriculture education. My dream is to educate and promote the future of agriculture as much as I can, and whether that be through the beef industry or agriculture education, that's kind of my hopes and dreams after I get out of here.
Another student at the lab is doing some independent study work. Eric Olson is hoping to use his microbiology education to become a doctor, and he says the meat lab gives him an opportunity to study microbes.
Learned to do some meat cutting, but also worked in the lab and did some of the E. coli and Listeria and other microbial testing. So that's how I came to be at the U of A meat lab.
The U of A meat science lab not only produces steaks and the like, but it also makes pet treats and beef jerky, among other things. It also provides animal tissue samples for researchers on other parts of campus. For Arizona Spotlight, I'm Robert Rappaport.
The U of A's Meat Science Lab is not only a teaching facility, It also makes available for sale a variety of locally produced beef and other homegrown meat products. You can find a link online at KUAZ.org. Fencing is a sport that these days seems like something of a novelty. Except for the Summer Olympics, you're much more likely to see a cinematic version of fencing in the movies than to see the real sport covered on TV news. However, at the Arizona Fencing Academy here in Tucson, there is an active community of men and women of all ages that take fencing very seriously. Luis Carrion paid a visit to the academy and brings us this look at a unique martial art.
You certainly have to know where to look to find people fencing in Tucson, or most communities for that matter. It's not the typical sport that has kids or adults rushing to sign up, but here, on a small commercial strip on Broadway, the sport is alive and well.
Oh, we got one. You stretch out.
My name is Ivan Gallego, and we teach fencing. It's an after-school program. We prepare students for a Junior Olympic competition.
Arizona Fencing Academy offers a year-round training program in the three Olympic disciplines of foil, épi, and saber.
Everybody line up! Whatever you're wearing, line up right now. We're doing footwork. Stretch it out. Stretch out.
The academy is made possible in large part by the passion of the founder and head coach of the program.
We have kids that go and travel to different states, different cities, to compete against better fencers and eventually get to the higher level of national competition, just like in any sport. You have local, regional stuff and then national stuff.
Ivonne Gallego is passionate about the sport, and like many of the students here, her interest was sparked initially by the movies. More often than not, what motivates young people to walk through these doors are the images of swashbuckling adventures on the screen.
My tia Mini was the one that took me to the movies all the time. We had four kids in my family. She would take us to the westerns and to the pirate movies because she had the favorite movie stars. And I liked the pirates because we had horses already, so I knew how to ride a horse, but I didn't know how to play with a sword, and that was, you know, it looked exciting. So she exposed me to fencing through the movies, but then I found out that fencing in the movies is totally different from what you do here. And so by going to university and taking beginning classes there, and then traveling around and training with other coaches in different cities and learning more about the sport and getting instruction, it developed me as a coach.
Riposte to the cheek, come back, parry three, riposte to the head, okay?
Yvonne's skill as a coach is what allows the student's initial interest to grow into a passion.
I am David Sant Lopez. I'm 13, and I started fencing when I was 10, so I've been fencing for 3 years now. I suggest definitely try it out. I mean, it's new, different, and I think it's really, really fun.
A passion for the camaraderie of a sport that is steeped in tradition.
Well, there are three types of fencing. There's foil, épée, and saber. This is the saber lame. The target is, the arms and the chest, back and stuff. The foil is chest and back. And groin.
Épée.
Everywhere.
All over. Everywhere.
Yeah.
It's clear that fencing is a sport that engages the mind as well as pushing the physical limitations of the body.
My name is Sunshine Howells, and my son is Hune, and he comes to fencing twice a week for 2 hours, and he's learning self-discipline.
Lung, back.
And because of the discipline that is required to develop the necessary skills, parents have found that kids often take home values that go beyond the techniques of the sport.
He's learned how to be very respectful. He would never think about talking back to coach, ever, which is amazing for an 11-year-old boy to not roll his eyes when he's told to do something.
Bend those knees. Two retreats and a lunge.
He does because he's told to and he knows that's what he's supposed to do. And she makes them do that to us as well. She expects them to be respectful and polite, and gentlemanly. They shake hands after every match with their opponent.
Now you look them in the eyeballs and you shake hands and you say thank you. Look them in the eye. Thank you. Okay, now.
It's nice to see them learn those manners. And she makes them earn their equipment. We're not allowed to purchase it for them. They have to go and earn the money themselves.
It is a martial art, which is a fighting activity. It's a game of war, basically. Nobody does fighting with a sword anymore because it's easier to just push a button and blow up people. But the word martial art is anything that you do as a game of war or to prepare people to do combat in the old days.
Fencing might seem like an unusual sport for kids these days, and it certainly doesn't have the marquee attraction of the NFL or NBA, but it's clear that for these students, the passion for the sport is real.
It's really fun. You get to meet a whole bunch of different people, make new friends, get, you know, physically fit, and it's just a blast.
It's a lot of hard work physically, mentally, emotionally. The kids have to learn how to use their brain power as well as their leg power as well as their emotional thing. They have to learn how to lose, how to win, and not get upset about it, and just enjoy the game and have fun with it.
For Arizona Spotlight, I'm Luis Carrion.
Now here is Stephanie Varney with a look at this weekend's arts calendar.
Can your feet propel a rocket? The Tucson Children's Museum is hosting an event where kids can design their own rocket ship and make it fly with a good stomp on the ground. The activity starts on Friday, January 18th at 3 p.m. and launches daily through January 20th. Dillinger Days is coming to town this weekend. The event will look back at the 1930s with music, tours, and reenactments of the Dillinger Gang's capture in Tucson. Participants are encouraged to wear a 1930s dress and be extras in the reenactment. Dillinger Days will also feature food vendors, crafts, and films. It all starts this Saturday, January 19th at 10:30 a.m. at the historic train depot on Toole Avenue, which is between 4th Avenue and Pennington Street. The beautiful wildlife of the Sonoran Desert is the inspiration for the International Wildlife Museum's Sonora Wildlife Arts Show this Saturday. The show will feature artwork from several artists, and the Arizona Raptors Club will also have a Birds of Prey demonstration outside of the museum on Saturday and Sunday. The art show starts January 19th and will run through January 20th. Or, if the Birds of Prey aren't enough, this Sunday, the Tucson Botanical Gardens will host a class called Gardening for the Birds. This class will introduce budding ornithologists to some of the local birds in Tucson and explain how to use gardening to attract them. It all starts on January 20th at 2 p.m., and pre-registration is required. For Arizona Spotlight, I'm Stephanie Varney.
That's Arizona Spotlight for this week. Thank you for listening. Arizona Spotlight is a production of KUAZ Radio from the University of Arizona and is produced in the KUAZ studios by Jim Blackwood. Our executive producer is Peter Michaels. The music heard on our program, including the theme, was written and performed by Calexico. Audio archives of our past shows, as well as podcasts of Arizona Spotlight, are available online at KUAZ.org. I'm Mark McLemore.